Thank you, Adam, and good morning to you all. I greet you all in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ. All good? All right. And so I came to you this morning, and I can see my title up here is a plan or a purpose. Probably really should be titled Plan and a Purpose. And what got me thinking about this is I went to a meeting recently for retirement, because I'm getting old enough to have to start seriously considering those things. And I went to this meeting, and you know, they didn't just talk about the finances of retirement. You know, the gentleman that got up and spoke, he was very impassioned about what he was speaking about. And one of the reasons why is because, you know, he'd done a career in law enforcement, and he had known many of his peers that did retirement, and within, you know, 5 years of retiring, they had passed away. And, you know, they had done all this planning, and they had done all this work to get to retirement, and they were so thankful of getting there, and then once they got there, they got to enjoy it for just a short amount of time. So he began to look at the reasons why this took place, and looking at statistics and studies and things like that, you know, and it's kind of grim for us police officers. On average, I think we get 5 years of retirement or something like that before we die. You know, a lot of it has to do with the stress that we go through, or we work shift work, we see a lot of things that are, you know, heavy on the mind. You know, like average person deals with, you know, 5 traumatic events in their life, and I think police officers deal with 5 traumatic events in their first year of working. You know, we just deal with so much more, and then the body and the mind are connected, and the mind is bothered, and the body suffers, and you know, so you have to plan for these things. You know, and so he gave his presentation. It was there for, you know, about 8 hours or so, and he's talking about all these things, different aspects of retirement. You know, talking about your health, talking about, you know, what you're going to do. You can't just sit on the couch at home, because then that means you're probably going to waste away, you know. So, you know, that's kind of what got me thinking on these things, you know, the plans and purpose, you know. And so the first thing we're going to talk about, though, is just, you know, what are these things? What's the difference? What does it mean? Because they kind of are intertwined. You wouldn't really make a plan unless you had a purpose, and you can't really make a very good plan unless you can't have a purpose unless you have a plan, right? So, you know, Gary said it before, if you fail to plan, plan to fail, right? So the plans are important. So look up the definition of a plan. Definition: a detailed proposal for doing or achieving something. So just like it says, you know, I'm going to come up with a list. I'm going to come up with a process. I'm going to figure out how to get from point A to point B, whatever that is, right? And we can plan just about anything. We plan where we're going to go to school. Again, I was planning for my retirement, planning for, what your job is going to be, or, you know, planning for a wedding. We got that coming up here. Young couple down in front, they got a plan for a wedding. There's lots of different things we got to plan for, right? So you're going to come up with some process of doing that. You know, there's a lot of advantages to having a plan, right? One, it sets a goal, right? It gives us something to focus on, you know. It helps guide your decision-making, right? So if I've got a goal in mind, and I'm going to look at this goal, you know, there are things that are going to enable that goal and things that are not. And so it kind of gives me a set of decision-making priorities that I have to work with. Yeah, I can identify some challenges, right? If I want to plan my vacation, I'm going to need to make reservations. I'm going to need to, you know, get the car, get the airplane ride, make a trip, you know, plan the time off of work, make sure I get the funding to do so. How much do I need? When do I need to do these things by? Right? There are, sometimes you can't do them too early, sometimes you can't do them too late. So challenges and all those things. Now it gives us a focus, right? So if we're focused on planning or focused on our plan, kind of weeds out a lot of the other things that we don't need that are going to get in the way of that plan. Setting priorities. Well, again, what's going to enable us to further our plan? And it gives us a measure of control when we make a plan. And probably one of the most important things, it minimizes risk. You know, my wife is the planner in our relationship. She plans lots of things. And, you know, it's important because these are all the benefits to having a plan. If you don't have a plan, you know, you're doing haphazard, you miss opportunities, you miss out on, you know, timetables and things. It's, you know, you got to have a plan. If you don't plan, you're just kind of drifting along. Now, what is the purpose? All right, so definition of a purpose is the reason for which something is done or created, or for which something exists, right? The why, right? Why am I doing this? So many the children, they'll ask, you know, why? Why? Why can't I do this? Why am I doing this? What's the purpose behind this? You know, they don't always see the purpose. You know, but us as adults and parents, we raise them. You know, we've been through things. We've done things. We understand the purpose, right? We're trying to help them get somewhere. We're trying to avoid them from suffering or getting pain or getting hurt. And so we have to tell our children, tell the people why. What is the why? What's the reason behind things? You know, because that adds. Again, there's benefits to having a purpose. It gives us inspiration. Gives us motivation to go out and do things, to get up out of bed in the morning. I see a lot of people who are depressed. They don't know why they would get out of bed in the morning. Why am I getting up? Why am I doing this? Why am I in this rat race? Over and I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again. Why am I doing this? They don't have a why, and they're depressed because of it. They have no inspiration. They got no motivation. Gives us clear outcomes, right? I know what I want. I can see. I have a vision of what I want to see. And when I can see my end goal, then I'm looking, you know, for opportunities to help forward that. You know, it gives me this value system. How am I going to make decisions? Off of what set of values am I going to adhere to in order to get me to my goal, to my plan? You know, it gives me added worth, right? I can put up with a lot if I've got a clear purpose in mind. You know, this brings trust and it brings faith. If you are a person with a purpose, people see that. And they know that, hey, he or she lives their life on a set of guidelines, set of circumstances that they don't deviate from. You know, they have integrity. They have a good soul by which they guide, you know, their North Star, so to speak. That's what guides them. It's constant. It gives trust. It gives faith. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why we need to have a purpose. And so these are the things that I would like to talk to you today about, planning and about purpose. Sometimes it would be nice if God just gave us the plan. Here's what you're going to do. Here's where you're going to go. Here's how you're going to do it. And you know, occasionally he does just that. If you look over in 1 Nephi, chapter 5, 70. And this is Nephi speaking. They have just come through the desert there over in the Middle East. And, you know, they were gotten the plates, and they'd wandered through the desert for a certain amount of time, and they had some trials, and they weren't allowed to cook their meat because they wanted to keep the smoke down, so they had to eat meat raw. They had to go, their women were bearing children as they went through. They were going through a lot. So they finally get to where they're going, and they get to the seashore, and they kind of sit there for a few days, and God tells Nephi, hey, you need to get up to the mountain. So he gets up to the mountain, and he starts to pray, and God begins to speak to Nephi, and he tells him, and it came to pass, the Lord spake unto me, saying, thou shalt construct a ship after the manner which I shall show thee, that I may carry thy people across these waters. So he gets given the plan. He gets given the tools. He gets given everything. God just said, here you go. Implement my plan. And Nephi asks him, like, where am I going to get the tools at? He shows him where. Here's where the ore is. You're going to make your tools. So he makes the tools. He starts making the boat. Starts building this ship. You know, because God gave him the plan to do. I'm like, all right, here we go. Plan is given, which is nice. It would be nice if God did that every day, right? Tell us exactly what to do, exactly where to go, exactly how to do it. That would be easy. Now, Nephi starts implementing this plan, and there doesn't go quite so smoothly. We skip down to verse 85. And when my brethren saw that I was about to build a ship, they began to murmur against me, saying, our brother is a fool, for he thinketh he can build a ship. And so they start to mock him. They start to kind of deride him, tell him that he is crazy. You know, here he was, Nephi, given this plan. Here's what you're going to do exactly. You know, that plan probably didn't include his brothers coming up and giving him a hard time. You know, we may have a plan, but oftentimes there's challenges to our plan. And so they begin to challenge him. They begin to give him problems and issues. And he then could have sat there and said, you know what? This is kind of crazy. I've never built a ship before in my life. And now I'm going to take everything that's precious to me, my family and all my belongings, and I'm going to put them on this boat and head for someplace I've never seen before. You can kind of see where his brothers are coming from. That kind of, on a sort of a human level, that makes a lot of sense. They got some teeth in their argument. This is crazy. Why are you doing this? You know, but Nephi understood the purpose, right? He may not have understood the full purpose, but he understood enough that he was willing to go on. And so his brothers begin to give him these problems, and he understands, you know, that there's a greater purpose involved, that their souls, you know, are at stake here. And again, you skip down to verse 151. He tells us, "Behold, my soul is rent with anguish because of you, and my heart is pained. I fear lest ye shall be cast off forever." So I'm worried about your souls. That's the problem. That's the purpose. You know, our souls belong to us. And where they go in the afterlife depends on what we do. And this is the purpose why we're doing these things. Not only ours, but, you know, we have this record, this written word that we're going to carry with us. It's going to have the ordinances of the gospel. It's got the plan of salvation in it, and people need this. There's a purpose behind what we're doing here. It's for our souls. It's for your souls. And so, if you read on in that little, after verse 151, he stuns his brothers with the power of God, and then they became a little bit more docile after that, and they started to pay attention. It doesn't say they helped him, but they stopped getting in the way, stopped asking him questions about it, and then they get on the ship. And everybody gets on the ship, and they all take off. And as they're going across, there must have been a lot of free time, as there is on ships, I'm sure. And so they all start, his brothers all start dancing and acting rude, and they start going back to the problems that they had before, and they start giving Nephi all these issues. And it gets to the point that they're very upset with him. They're telling him, "Hey, you're not Lord over us. Who made you the king?" And they begin to act and treat him very poorly. You know, verse 188, "And it came to pass that Laman and Lemuel did take and bind me with cords, and they did treat me with much harshness." So here we have Nephi. He's implemented the plan that God has given him. We're never told in the plan, like, hey, part of this plan is you're going to get tied up at the post of the ship for days. Part of this plan is that your wife is going to have to sit here and watch you, and she's going to suffer emotionally, mentally, that she's got to sit you, that she can't give you food, she can't give you water, she can't cut you down. Your children are going to see this, and they're going to suffer. Your parents are going to see this, and they're going to be on the verge of death because they're in such mental anguish. Now, that wasn't mentioned in the plan, was it? God said, "Build a boat and go." Where is this in the plan, Lord? How is this working out? You know, we come across trials. You know, we may make a plan, but things can get in the way of plans, can't they? And so it gets so bad, you know. The people are pleading with him. Their parents are literally on the verge of death, as it describes them there. They're about to die. They're about to perish. And the children that are there are about to perish. And Laman and Lemuel still are like, "Nope, we're going to do it our way." And then finally, there's this big storm that arises. And they see that the last moment, all right, looks like we're all going to die, so now it's important to me. So they cut Nephi down, right? You know, this plan is tested. "And after that we have been driven back upon the waters for the space of 4 days, my brethren began to see that the judgments of God were upon them, and that they must perish, save they should repent of their iniquities. Wherefore they came unto me and loosed the bands which were upon my wrists, and behold, they had swollen exceedingly. And also mine ankles were much swollen, and great was the soreness of." So he was feeling some pain. You know, I can't imagine being tied up to a post for a few days. It would feel good. Plus, having to weather a storm as you're tied to the post. Plus, having to see your wife and your children and your parents all suffer. You know, that was not an easy thing to go through. You know, a little bump in the plan, if you will. So what do you think he did once he got down? "Well, nevertheless, I did look upon my God and did praise him all the day long. And I did not murmur against the Lord because of mine afflictions." So thank you, Lord. Thank you. You know, how could you do something like that? If this was your plan, and you came up with this, and you met all these obstacles, could you get to a moment of freedom and be like, "Thank you, Lord. I appreciate this. I'm happy that my ankles are swollen, my wrists are swollen, my children and my wife and my parents have watched me suffer, they have suffered." How do you do something like that? Is it just because of the planning? I have to say no. Because Nephi knew the purpose. He understood what the purpose behind it was, that there was a greater purpose behind what was going on. And it came to pass that I prayed to the Lord, and after I had prayed, the winds did cease, and the storm did cease, and there was a great calm. And their compass started to work again, and they were then delivered to the promised land. They found shore and safety. And the plan worked out. Because they knew the purpose. Because Nephi was all in. Even though his plan that was given to him didn't work out, there wasn't quite enough detail to explain everything that was going to happen to them. He knew the purpose behind it, and the purpose that he could rest, and the purpose that he could find the strength to drive on, the purpose to thank God in the midst of his trial. He was all in, and you've got to be all in. If you're not all in, it's not going to happen. Got a picture up here. You want to take a guess who that is? No, not quite Columbus. He was after Columbus. What's that? Cortez. That is Hernan Cortez. A picture of Hernan Cortez. We all know him. We all know his story, right? He did the conquest of Mexico in 1519, and by 1521, he had defeated the Aztecs. He did this through a series of battles, a series of alliances. Also helped that smallpox came in and kind of ravaged the population there. Lots of things that were going in his favor. But it didn't start off great, right? So back in these days, if you wanted to get financed, you had to get permission from the crown, essentially, to give you, and they called them charters. Right? You had to get a charter. And so he'd gotten a charter from the governor of Hispaniola, which I believe is Haiti and Dominican Republic, if I'm not mistaken, today. And so he had gotten this charter from that governor saying, hey, you're allowed to go over here and conquer these lands for the queen. But the governor and he didn't get along, didn't see eye to eye. And so he left, and then shortly after he left, the governor said, I revoke the charter. And so word got to Cortez that his charter was revoked. He wasn't allowed to go do this. And so Cortez said, nah, I'm going to do it anyway. And so he collected some men, collected some more ships, and promised them glory. And one of the reasons he wanted to do was he wanted to go convert the natives to Christianity. And so he had this purpose in mind. I've got to go do this. So he had this purpose, and the rough start happens. All right, so he knows the governor has the ability to arrest him if he goes back. And so he's only got, in his mind, one way, and that's forward. But he needs all of his men to be all in as well. And so, as we all know the story, he had 11 ships, and he had 10 of them. Common story is that they were burned, but they're not exactly sure where that came from. That was written much later on. But he did, in his own accounts, he scuttled his ships. So he did take them, and there's some evidence that he may have lied to his crew, said, hey, there's worm rot in these ships. We can't sail them back. So it could have been that. Or he could have just said, hey, we're not going back. We've got to be all in. Because for him, if he had gone back, he'd have been arrested. So he had to get all his crew and all his men on board and be all in. We are going forward. And they did. They went forward. And, we all read about him today. Now, not a great story. He committed what you call a bunch of war crimes. Slaughtered a bunch of people that weren't supposed to be slaughtered, Forced conversion of people to Christianity, at gunpoint. Not exactly a great missionary trip, I would say. But he goes through and he does his conquest, and he essentially conquers Mexico with about only a 100 and some odd men that he had on his own. Right? Now, again, through alliances and things like that, he was able to do it. But he was all in. It's like, hey, there is no going back. But I wanted to find a better story about going all in, so I found one. Elijah with a J, and there's Elisha with an SH. It's going to be a little confusing. So I'll differentiate these two. There's Elijah, who was a prophet called of God. He's the one that slew all the prophets of Baal. He's the one that got fire to come out of heaven and consume the altar After it was doused in water, Elijah was the one who was fed by ravens, who was fed by an angel under a tree. You know, he had seen all these things, and you know, he got a little depressed at times, got a little upset, and God comes to him and comforts him. He's the one that caused the drought to take place on Israel. You know, so Elijah is the first prophet in this story. And so he gets through doing all this. He's kind of sad and he's kind of depressed. And the Lord comes to him and tells him, all right, here's what you're going to do. You're going to anoint this king. You're going to go to this place. And you're going to go and find Elisha. And you're going to anoint him to be the next prophet. And so Elisha is home with his father. 1 Kings 19:19. So he departed thence, talking about Elijah. And he found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed him and cast his mantle upon him. Now, there's the picture there. It's kind of a funny picture, I know. It's the best one I could find. They both look kind of shocked at what's happening there, but that mantle was a skin of some kind. So it was like a cloak. But it was representative of the Spirit of God, that it was resting upon Elijah. And so he's now taking this and he's passing it off, saying, hey, you're the one that's going to take this torch. You now have the responsibility. So we get that phrase, you know, taking up the mantle. That's where it comes from, taking on this responsibility. So he passes it to Elisha. Now in this photo here, you'll see in the back there, there's a ox. And he's got some kind of a harness there on him, a yoke. And it doesn't really go into great detail, but there's some things we can extrapolate from this, right? So Elisha is at home with these oxen and his father's land. And, you know, he probably had a different plan up to that day. Reason being is, like, to own oxen, you had to have wealth. And back then, wealth meant you had to have land, because oxen eat a lot. They take a lot of food. And if you were going to work them, they take even more food. So in order for these oxen to live, you have to have a significant amount of land for them to have pasture. And so not only does he have one yoke of oxen, his dad has 12. So if you were to translate this to today, this family was the family that lived on the top of the hill. They had everything. 12 yoke of oxen meant they had to have a significant amount of land in order to maintain these animals, because they were not easy to maintain. You couldn't just go down to the store and buy your hay. It doesn't work like that. You had to have the land to have enough fodder for them to go eat. So you had to have significant holdings in order for this plan to come to work. So basically, Elisha was a member of a very well-off family. Very rich. He could have, his plan was to continue to work with his father, to continue to stare at the backside of an ox as he plowed these fields. That was probably his plan. It was going to work. That's not a bad plan. You're going to provide. Be provided for. Inherit what your father has given you. And be able to work this land. So his plan was probably just to inherit and to plow. But then along comes Elijah. And Elijah comes along and says, I have a purpose. A purpose that must be passed. I can't do it on my own. So plans change. When you know your purpose, when you have a purpose, plans often change. And so this plan changes, and we continue on. And he left the oxen and ran after Elijah, and said, let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and mother, and then I will follow thee. And he said to him, go back again, for what have I done to thee? So he said, all right, I got to go say goodbye to mom and dad, and then I'm going to come after you. And not only does he immediately say, I'm going to come back with you, I'm going to leave my mother and father, I'm going to leave us behind, he does something else. He is all in. And he returned back from him and took the yoke of oxen and slew them and boiled their flesh with the instruments of oxen and gave unto the people, and they did eat. And then he arose and went after Elijah and ministered unto him. You know, this is Elisha's version of burning the ships. He took his inheritance that day, destroyed it, gave it to people around him. The implements that he would have to plow fields were gone. His inheritance was gone. I am all in. I have nothing to fall back on if this doesn't work out. I've taken my inheritance and I've given it up because I'm all in. Because he knew he had a purpose, a greater purpose. What was his purpose? Well, let's take a look. So Elisha, he did a whole bunch of things, all mostly in 2 Kings. One of the first things, or one of the things he does, 2 Kings, 2nd chapter, he comes to a city, and the city has bad water. And they tell him, you know, the city is going to perish unless we get good water. And so he ends up casting some salt in the water. I don't know what was wrong with it, but he casts the salt in the water, and the water is made good. And the city is able to move on. It's established. It's able to continue on. These people are not destroyed. So he heals the waters, if you will. 2 Kings 4:42. Again, he is with a group of people, and they come to him, and they say, we've got this little bit of food here. Not much, but we've got 100 people here. It's not enough to feed them. And Elijah tells them, go ahead, feed them with what you've got. And they take their corn that they had and their bread, and they're able to feed all 100 people with what they had. You know, this miracle took place. 2 Kings 5:14, there was a leper. It was actually a king at the time. I think it was king of Syria or king of Assyria. I can't remember. One of the kings in that area had leprosy. And he heals this king of his leprosy. 2 Kings 4:4, there is a widow whose husband has passed away. She is destitute and left with nothing. And he asks her what she has. She says, I've got this oil. That's all I got. So he says, take the oil you got and start to fill these other pots with your oil. And she fills and fills and fills and fills. And she has enough for herself, not only enough for herself, but enough to sell, to make up for the loss of her husband, to support her. You know, a life insurance policy, if you will. She's able to support herself through the sales of the remaining oil. Again, Kings 4, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 34. Elijah raises a young boy from the dead. There was a famine in the land, and then this, again, another maid, this is all she has, is her son, young son, and he dies. And Elijah goes in, raises him from the dead. It's a funny one. Kings 6:6. He tells everyone to go out. They need to build stuff. So they go out, they start building stuff, and somebody's swinging an axe. And the axe head goes flying into the water. And they say, oh no, I borrowed that. And you can imagine that now the axe head was made out of iron. Probably not easy to replace. He said, I borrowed that, now it's gone. And Elijah asks, where's it at? It fell in over here. He tosses a stick in the water, and this axe head comes to the surface. Impossible. A miracle. There it was for those to see. You know, this mantle that had passed to him, God is with Elijah. 2 Kings, the 8th chapter and 12th, he prophesies the downfall of Israel. And what was his purpose in doing all these things? He was here because he knew of one who was coming, Christ, who said, I am the living water. John 4:10, he tells the woman at the well, drink the water I have, you'll never thirst again, you'll live. Matthew 14:19, Christ, they come to him. We don't have enough food to feed these people. What do we do? What does Christ say? Feed them with what you've got. These loaves and fishes, feed them. And they're fed and they have leftovers. Christ comes and he heals. Leper. came to him with his sickness and his illness, and he heals him. Christ also gave excess blessing. He fills the pots at the wedding feast. They're filled with water, and they're made to wine. He fills them completely. Hundreds of gallons. Enough to last the wedding feast. Christ, Mark 5:41, raises the young girl from the dead. Matthew 14:25, Christ himself walks on water. Again, impossible. A miracle. And then he prophesies the downfall of Israel. What was his purpose? He was here before Christ, to point to Christ, to let everyone know these are the things that he will do. Look for these things. Look to him. He is the living water. He can heal. He can forgive. So he left behind his inheritance, left behind the sure bet to go and serve a higher purpose. And what is our purpose? If you look in Peter, 1 Peter chapter 2, wherefore, laying aside all malice and guile and hypocrisies and envyings and all evil speakings. You know, I want to pause just a moment there. When Peter was talking to this audience here, you know, these were people that were oppressed. And we haven't really been oppressed like these people have. Well, these people were sought out. They were murdered. They were killed for sport. They were prohibited from engaging in business. This is the audience that he's talking to. It'd be very, very easy to have malice and guile and anger towards those who are deliberately mistreating you. And what does Peter tell them? Lay it all aside. You cannot use the tools of Satan to further the gospel of Christ. Verse 2, as newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby. If so be, ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious, to whom coming as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious, yea, also as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Christ Jesus. You know, this purpose that he has given, you have to get rid of a lot of things that are natural to us so that we can fulfill this purpose. Get rid of the hate. You know, so many, you look online and you see so many people that are they're pointing the finger and they're accusing. And they have identified sins. And they scream at the top of their lungs. Look, look at the evil. They make accusation. They spew hatred. And that's not what we're to do. We've got to get rid of that. Because we've got a better, higher purpose that we're called to. Wherefore, also it is contained in the scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you, therefore, which believe he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner. A stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. We've got a different purpose. When all around us, people may revile you, may make fun of you, put you down for your belief, and we're not to engage. We have a higher calling. They're in darkness, and our job is to call them out of the darkness, to be the light, like our Sunday school told us this morning. Let your light shine. You'll find your purpose, and you can endure all those that do you wrong. You have a purpose. You can be lashed the mast of a boat for days on end in a storm, and if you have purpose, it can carry you through. All right, I have a little experiment here. I'm going to see if it works. Hope it does. I've got a video that I would like you guys to watch. Oops, it's turned off. Uh-oh. Battery 70%. All right. Let's see if this works here. So here's a video. It's a comedian who is, he does comedy tours, and apparently he takes breaks in the middle. He talks to people in the middle of his breaks, you know. And he'll get, hopefully this works, cross my fingers. You'll see this young gentleman, this gentleman here, he talks to this gentleman in the audience during the middle of his...
This is called How Do I Know? And a lot of times when people hear the phrase, how do I know, the next thing they say is what? How do I know what? But the key really isn't to know what, the key is to know why. Because when you know your why, you have options on what your what can be. For instance, my why is to inspire people to walk in purpose. My what is stand-up comedy. My what is writing books. My what can be going out with some friends to eat. In fact, another what that has moved me towards my why is a web series that we have out now called Break Time. So every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, you should subscribe to the channel. We do a series called Break Time on YouTube. So 3 o'clock, we drop a new episode. One episode in particular, I'm about to show you a clip to. We were in Winston-Salem. So Break Time, this is how it works. I travel the country, I do stand-up comedy, probably an hour, hour and a half at an event. And in the middle of my show, I'll just sit down and start talking to the audience. And funny just happens. Or I'll meet somebody who's really interesting. So I met this one guy, and he said that he teaches music at a school. I was like, all right, you teach music, you know, can you sing? And then I'm just gonna show you a clip. Check it. So you're a musical director?
Yes, sir.
All right, so let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that real quick?
Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wow. That bro could sing. You know what I'm saying? All right. Now, what you give me the version is if your uncle just got out of jail, you got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick, if you know which version I'm talking about. Just see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved.
You know, he was given purpose. Could you all see the difference? And the first time, he was technical, he was counting with his hand, the beat, and he could do it. You know, he had a plan, he'd implemented the plan. Plan was going good. And then he was given Why? What's your purpose? You know, that whole crowd reacted absolutely differently. Why? They could see and feel purpose that he had behind him. Not just technically correct, not just an executed plan, but, you know, purpose. You know, and it shows, when you know your purpose, it shows. That's how it builds. That's how it enables people to go, wade through affliction and loss. And when you know your purpose, your plan, it doesn't matter. It can be anything. And what's the plan? I'm going to give somebody a call today. Give them a call. I haven't heard them in a while. I'm going to give that person a kind word. Just something nice. Could be changing tire. Are you exhibiting the lights of Christ through your life by doing these things? Absolutely. It could be speaking the truth in love. Sometimes it's hard to look at someone you love, tell them a hard truth, but it can be done. You have your purpose. It makes that uncomfortable bearable. It could be it becoming a doctor, or a lawyer, a firefighter, a hop. It could be anything. Be owning your own business. It could be part of God's plan. As long as you know your purpose is. You know, it could be being sent to jail. How many of the writers in our Gospels were in prison? That probably wasn't in their plan. I'm going to go to jail so I can proselytize. Probably didn't happen that way. Wasn't a part of their plan. And yet, they fulfilled the purpose. Becoming ill. Becoming disabled. Becoming maimed. Nobody plans on those things. Does that interrupt the purpose? It shouldn't. Because the plan could be anything if you have the right purpose. You know, this plan can include anyone. It could be your family, your spouse, your children, parents, your siblings. It could include your friends. It could include your coworkers, the store clerk. It could include the mayor, the stranger. It could include the saint, or it could include the sinner. You know, if you know your purpose, the plan becomes a very fluid thing. I can serve my purpose no matter what. I can serve my purpose in any situation. I can serve my purpose no matter what happens around me or to me. And you know, what beauty of purpose is, it doesn't matter whether we talk to one or a million. You know, God's not looking for numbers. You know, it's not by works that we're saved. It's not by how many we convert. Whether we talk to one, 100, 1,000, a million, are we fulfilling our purpose? 2 Corinthians 4:16, for which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. You know, if you fulfill your purpose, whether it touches a few or many, when we go on to our reward, we're going to stand next to Elisha. We're going to stand next to Paul. We're going to stand next to Peter, next to Nephi, next to Alma, Moroni. You know, they all earn the same reward. Even though we read about them and they touched all these lives, it's not the number. Are you fulfilling your purpose? Are you adapting the plan that God has given us? Because the reward is the same. We're all going to hear the same thing if we're fulfilling our purpose. It's, enter ye in, good and faithful servant. Your work is done. Well, thank you for your time.